Okay, so so we are looking at this week's parasha is Ki Tetzeh, and the discourse that we have here is a discourse that was said in 1967, and it was also in Elul as we are now, and Parasha Ki Tetzeh, same parasha. And it focuses on the verse, which is the second line of the text from the Torah, which we've got at the front page. Lo tachrosh v'sho uv'chamo yachdav. Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Now that's part of a group of verses about not having mixed things. So the previous verse is about not sowing wheat in a vineyard, and the next verse is about not wearing wool and flax, wool and linen, in a mixture together. So here we're just looking at this idea of the ox and the donkey. Don't plow with an ox and donkey together. Now, what the discourse is going to do is take this concept, and based on the teachings of an earlier Chabad rabbi who taught this in 1867, so we're going to... Is it as long as that? Yes. So he taught this in 1867. So there's going to be like a whole lot of images coming out of this ox and donkey. You know, so it's like it's a series of images together, and it's interesting. It's like, you know, if you were doing it graphically, you know, like, or on a computer, as if you know, the biblical text is like a kind of a web text. You know, you click on something, you know, you get one page, you know, one like image, and then another one, and another one, you know. So that's what it's sort of doing, you know, and it focuses on, you know, like images from the past, images within oneself, and what it means in the personal service of the individual to God, and how it relates to the month of Elul, you know. So that's like a, it's a whole presentation of images springing out from this verse. So in order to help us relate to it, there's the idea of the melody of the discourse, which goes like this, approximately. Oh, ye yom ba ya, yam ba yam ba yom, ha ye ram ba ya, yo ya yo. Ya 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 do, ha ya da da ba ya ya da da ba yo ba ho, ya ya da da ba ya ba yo, ha ya da da ba ya ba yo ba ya da da ba ha ya da da ba ho, ha ya ba ba ya da da ba ya ba ya ba ya da da ba ho ya ba ho ya ba. So now we go into the actual text of the discourse on page 8 of this Devar Malchut edition. Lo tachrosh v'sho v'chamo yachdov. Don't plow with an ox and a donkey together. Umevi admo marash and Rab Shmuel, that's the fourth Lubavitcher Rebbe. B'dibu ha-matchel zeh d'shnat tavchesh kavzayin. In his discourse, which began with the same words of 1867, he brings kama perushim b'fasuk zeh, a number of different interpretations of this verse. Perush echad. Okay, so now here we have the first explanation. Now here we move on to the story. There's a chap called Chamor in the book of Genesis. Does anyone remember what Chamor did? Nicole? No. Chamor is the person who had an affair with Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. Right? So he was someone lived in Shechem. He seduced her or raped her, and then was a whole further sequence of what happened, which in terms of being politically correct is a slightly uncomfortable story, where the sons of Jacob are very annoyed about this, as one can imagine. And Hamor very much
wanted to marry her.
Yeah, he wanted to marry her. So so they said to him, well, you can't marry her if you're not circumcised. And so he says, yeah, I don't mind, that's fine, I'll be circumcised. So he persuaded his whole nation to be circumcised. And it's actually not Hamor who raped her, who seduced her. It's Shechem, the son of Hamor. But Hamor is the focus, because Hamor means donkey. You see, that it's the same word. So they said to Hamor, you know, our daughter can't marry your son unless he's circumcised. So they agreed, they all agreed, all the people of Shechem agreed to be circumcised. So they were circumcised. So on the third day, when they were weakest after circumcision, Shimon and Levi came along and killed the entire town. So in fact, Jacob, their father, was angry with them about that. And he said, what have we done? You know, terrible thing, etc. So that's an incident in the book of Genesis, right? Rather gory incident. It's now all going to be reinterpreted over here. So that's how it starts off. This is the first interpretation relates back to that story.
Is there any connection to this and the Six-Day War? Because there must have the Sikha, the Maimon must have been given just a bit after that.
That's a very good point. It was shortly after. I mean, the Six-Day War was in the summer,
Yeah. And
this is in the month of El. You know, so. Maybe, you know, if you can see a connection. I didn't, when I was looking at it earlier today, I didn't notice a particular connection, but perhaps there is, you know, which maybe we'll think of. I mean, there is the idea that Nachmanides says that the fact that they conquered this city of Shechem, even though Jacob was upset about it, but nonetheless, it was like the first step that they made in conquering the land of Israel, and eventually they did conquer the whole land of Israel. It was like a step, it was a step towards them. Now, so this is connected. The first explanation is this connects al pimash katub b'midrash, according to what it says in the midrash. K'shabach Hamor levakesh dina miYaakov. When Hamor came to ask Dina from Jacob for his son Shechem, Amalo, he said to him, Hamor said to Jacob, this is what the Midrash says, the Torah text doesn't say, Yodeh ani shezikmecha Avraham haya nasi, I know your grandfather Abraham was a leader, a nasi, v'ani gam ken nasi, I'm also a leader. So Jacob said to him, Amar lo, lo nasi nikha el ashor. My grandfather wasn't called a leader, a nasi. He was called an ox. Why was he called an ox? Shenem avel abakar ratzavra. It says in the verse in Genesis, Abraham ran to the oxen. So the fact of running to the oxen for the Midrash operates in a kind of associative way. The fact that Abraham ran to the oxen, that lends to Abraham the idea of being an ox. And an ox is something very powerful. There are many harvests in the power of an ox. So therefore my grandfather, Jacob, is trying to argue against this wedding, this marriage. Jacob says, my grandfather's called an ox. V'ata chamor. But your name is chamor, which means a donkey. V'i efshar lachrosh, and you can't plow, b'shor v'chamor yachda, with an ox and a donkey together, as it says in the verse in our Sedra. Right? The fact that our Sedra comes hundreds of years after Jacob is talking to Chamor, you know, that doesn't matter to the Midrash time, it's cyclical, and anyway he knew by the Divine Spirit what was going to be written in the Torah. And Chamor also respected that there is such a concept, which is in Jewish law. So he's saying we can't have a marital bond between our families, because I come from one who is called an ox, and you come from one who's called a donkey, or you are, your name means donkey, and so therefore there can't be a union together. V'hainu. Now let's try and interpret that. Shinyan ha'shor hu b'chinat kedusha. In this example, in this way of reading it, the ox represents something holy. What does the ox represent? B'chinat chesed shebigvura. Kindness, which is in severity. You see, there's kindness, severity, mercy. These are the different spirit, the different divine emanations. So the thing is, within each divine emanation, there are all the others as well. There's a kind of interleaving. So in kindness, there's severity, and in severity, there's kindness. So what it says over here, that the ox represents the kindness in severity. Now this footnote 6 gives a reference to a Kabbalistic book. It's just it's in initial letters, Ma'ore Or. It's a Kabbalistic book, and the point is there's a kind of certain genre of Kabbalistic books where it gives like all kinds of equivalences, or there's even a dictionary in Rav Moshe Cordovero's famous book Pardes Rimonim, The Orchard, the Pomegranate Orchard, or whatever you call it, the Pomegranate Grove. It's a famous Kabbalistic book. So there's a kind of dictionary in it, and you can look up any word, or the words which are there, and it'll give you what it means Kabbalistically. So what does ox mean Kabbalistically, according to this particular book that's quoted? Kindness of severity. V'chamor, and the donkey, the donkey is the negative force which is opposed to the quality of the right. The right means kindness or love. Psolet hachasadim, the negative aspect of love. You see, love is very positive. Love is the most wonderful thing, Jewish thought. You should love the Lord your God. You should love your neighbor as yourself. Re'ei isha asher hafta is the advice King Solomon gives. See a woman that you love, marry her, live with her, be happy. So love is a very powerful thing. In fact, the word va'ahavta, and you should love. I thought I produced these earlier. So the word you should love is a very interesting word. So let's v'ahavta. That means that you should love. Something stronger to express this. Now vav is 6. Give me that.
Need a new battery.
So Vav is 6, Aleph is 1, Hey is 5, Beit is 2, and Tav is 400. So that's 6, 7, 12, 17, 4, 1, 7. No. 8. No, 6, 7, oh, 4, 1, 4. Yeah? 6 and 1 is 7, 12, 14, and 400. 4, 1, 4. So the word or, which means light, Aleph is 1, Vav is 6, and Resh is 200. So that equals 207. So twice light makes love, right? So there's the light which goes from A to B and from B to A, and together those two dimensions of light makes Vahavtan, you should love. You know, so there's the idea of the individual and God, and then there's the image which comes from that, it's like husband and wife. So love is a very, very powerful thing. The only problem is that there is a negative shadow, if you like, of love, which is when love is, or a distortion of love, which is expressed in inappropriate and negative ways. And that's exactly what this story of Hamor and his son Shem raping or seducing Dina, it's all a false variety of love. So therefore Hamor represents the negative aspect of love. So that's whereas Abraham, the ox, represents love in severity. Abraham represents love. That's a famous concept. Abraham is love, and Isaac is severity, and Jacob is mercy. But when Abraham is represented as an ox, so it's love, but it's love in a quality of severity. Now, because Hamor and Shem, his son, have got this quality of false love, Shalachin ratza Shem ben Hamor lidabek bedina. That's why Shechem, the son of Hamor, wanted to cleave to Dina. He wanted to cleave to her because he expresses love, even though it's an inappropriate love, it's the wrong kind of love. But he wants to drink, he wants to draw from this realm of holiness, where the love, the pure and exalted love of Abraham is there. So there's the positive love, a positive love of Abraham, and then we have this false love, which is trying to draw from that. That's the way the klipot try to attach themselves to something. Now the klipot bother us as well, because the klipot represent negative desires, negative attachments, which are trying to draw our spiritual energy, as it were, into the wrong channel, and drain us of the spiritual energy. So by, in fact, the commands of the Torah, which tell us don't do this and don't do that, are really telling us how to preserve our inner spiritual equilibrium and not let it get drained away in the wrong channel. So here we have the ox and the donkey. And so therefore, the ox is something holy and the donkey is something inappropriate and negative, which is trying to draw from that. Now on line 12, and the command, don't plow with an ox and a donkey together. Now incidentally, the reason for this prohibition, the simple level of the reason, is that the Torah doesn't want these two animals to have intercourse together. It doesn't want two different kinds of animal to have intercourse together. And so the fear is, if the farmer is plowing with the two of them, or having the two of them draw a cart or something like that, so he'll eventually put them in a stable together or something like that, and then one will mount the other. That's if one's a male, the other a female, one will mount the other, and it'll be a mixed breeding. Which the Torah doesn't want that mixed breeding, and that's why before, in the verse before, it said about not mixed seeds, not putting wheat in a vineyard. So there's this kind of sense of everything has its own significance as it is, and not to mix things together. So therefore the commandment not to plow with the ox and the donkey together, haynu lahachik klipat hachamor, to keep the negative force of the donkey away, so that it shouldn't draw in this inappropriate way from the sacred level of the ox in this instance. And explains further in that discourse, that is why the children of Jacob said to Chamor that he should circumcise himself. That's why they said he should be circumcised. Ki al yedei amilah, because through being circumcised, naaseh ha'avarat ha'ohla shi'aklipa, he will remove this negative quality. The ohla, the foreskin, represents the force of concealment of holiness. Just as literally the foreskin covers this very sacred member, this sacred part of the body, and the foreskin covers it, so it's like a klipa, like a shell which covers over holiness. And so if this impure negative aspect is removed, v'lachein yuchal az lidabek b'fchinat ha'chasadim, then he'll be able to connect with the power of love, of kindness, which comes from Abraham through Dinah. Right, so we've got Abraham and his granddaughter, great-granddaughter, Dina. So, in other words, they are presenting him with a rationale, a mystical rationale, why he should be circumcised. And that's actually why he did. That's why he wanted it. Now, Behem Shechamayma, as it explains further in that discourse of 1867, Mavod explained, Shebnei Yaakov rimu oto, the children of Jacob deceived him, because they wanted, I mean, there are two ways in which they deceived him. One way in which they deceived him is, as it says in the Torah, they spoke to, they were actually planning this, to kill off this village, because they were very angry that their sister had been raped, and no one in the village protected her. That's the view, that's the way the sages see it. That there was this girl who came into this village, someone rapes her, and no one protects her in any way. No one tried to stop her. So therefore they see the whole village as meriting the death penalty. Now in fact, in Jewish law, if a man is trying to rape a woman, and you can't stop him in any other way, you're allowed to kill him. Because this is seen as something which it's the equivalent of a capital crime against the woman, and therefore one is allowed to kill the man. But if one can stop him without killing him, then one is supposed to do that. And certainly the penalty for rape or seduction is not the death penalty, unless it's a married woman. If it's a married woman, it is actually the death penalty. But otherwise it wouldn't be. And so the case of Dina, she wasn't married. So seduction of an unmarried girl, or even, God forbid, rape, you know, there would be compensation to pay to her and other things, but it wouldn't be the death penalty. However, in this case, they saw it as something which demands the death penalty. By the seven Noahide laws, it could be that there is the death penalty, actually. So they're tricking him, because actually they want to put the inhabitants of this village, this town, to death. But there's another way of looking at it as a trick. Kiyadua, as it's known, shebeirua klipa hu al yedei mirma. The way in which you deal with the forces of impurity is through trickery. Now we get that several times in the Bible. Can you think of a case where something is achieved through a trick in the Bible?
The birthright.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely right. Jacob and Esau. Jacob gets the blessing which is intended for Esau, by dressing up as Esau. He puts on his brother's clothes and he pretends to be his brother, all under the instructions of their mother, Rebekah. So the idea is, why does Jacob have to go through this whole process? Because the way in which negativity came into the world at the very beginning of creation was through the snake and Eve. And the idea is, the snake tricked Eve. The snake tricked Eve into eating from the tree. It told her lies about what would happen if you eat from the tree, and it'll be so wonderful, and you'll live forever, and this and that, and you'll know everything. And she ate from the tree, and it didn't have that effect at all, but it meant that she had lost, and then she gave to her husband as well, and then it turned out they both lost their special connection with the divine, and they were being thrown out of the Garden of Eden. So, and that was the beginning of all evil. So since evil comes about through trickery, the way to dissolve evil is also through trickery. So there's a sense in which we trick evil. So there's the tricking of Esau, or the tricking, or it's actually more subtle. It's Jacob is really tricking his father, but he's in order to get the blessing from his father. So somehow or other, in order to undo the negativity, there has to be some kind of trick. And I think that the way this works for us as people, that there's a sense in which we have to deal very subtly with ourselves. And in certain ways we have to trick ourselves in order to get ourselves to do what we want us to do, or not do what we don't want ourselves to do. You know, for example, if you think of someone trying to give up smoking, you know, so there are all kinds of, you know, cognitive tricks that the person might go through in order to prevent himself from smoking, you know, to get that level of self-mastery. We somehow can't master ourselves just neat. You know, we can't say, oh, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. We never do it again. No, we do it. Like the chap who says, yeah, I'm very good at giving up smoking. I've given up smoking 7 times. So there's this sense of a trick. And so therefore that was the trick which was needed in order to somehow break this connection between the false love trying to draw from the pure love, the true love. Shehiftichu lo al etzem ha'inyan, they promised him. I mean, that was the trick. They promised him that he could marry Dinah if all he had to do was be circumcised. Now, he didn't realize that when he circumcised himself, then through the removal of the foreskin, then the power of klipa, the power of concealment, will be removed from holiness, v'lo yidbak b'dinah, and he will no longer have any connection with Dinah. Now, it doesn't go into the whole story here of how they killed the people of Shechem, and as a result of that, he didn't have any more connection with Dinah. But it's as if it was in an abstract way that they're telling him, remove the foreskin, and then the falsity, as it were, will be removed, and you'll be able to connect to Dinah. But now this is really a trick. Because in fact, by removing the foreskin, the whole connection is broken. That whole connection, it breaks, and he can never have anything more to do with Dinah, because he now is in a... I think the logic of the discourse is he's removed a certain level of falsity, and as a result, he knows, or he would know, that he cannot be married to Dinah. It's impossible for him to be married to Dinah, and as if that would be a reality, you know, almost without this massacre taking place, you know, which is described in the book of Genesis. But the fact of him reaching a certain level of purity would enable him to recognize that he and Dinah cannot be together.
That's I'm just turning this off for a second.
Oh, I don't know if it was working. Oh, God. Anyway.
You need batteries?
No, I put in.
Last week I was reading about how. Was it if you. Something about if you kill someone. It was to do with last week's parsha, I was reading it. In the refuge cities.
Huh?
Cities of refuge. Kill someone in a.
No, but I think that might have been linked to it. But it was something about if you try and kill someone, or if you don't succeed in killing someone, you're not allowed to be killed because that punishment can only be meted out by God. But if you.
Do you mean if you accidentally kill someone?
My brain is. It's just, I was thinking about what you said about, you know, if it's a married woman, then it's the death penalty. If it's not. Because whatever I was reading said that if the person does manage to kill someone, they cannot be killed for that crime. It's only if they.
Oh.
If they're stopped in the.
Yeah, this is the false witness.
The false witness, yeah.
The false witness. Who comes and says?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He comes and says, "So and so murdered someone."
Yeah.
So the law court starts discussing this. Now, if the false witness is caught in time, so in other words, another two witnesses come along and they say, "Hey, what are you talking about? You couldn't have been over here in Tel Aviv, where this murder is supposed to have taken place. You were with us in Elat." And so you can't testify for this case. And so that means the person is caught out trying to give, or the two people are caught out trying to give false testimony. And they are then put to death because that's what they were trying to achieve for the person against whom they were framing.
Yeah.
But what you're referring to is if they actually have him put to death, the court doesn't put them to death,
yeah.
Even though it's now found out that they were false witnesses and it was a terrible miscarriage of justice.
Yeah.
The law from the Torah is that you don't put these witnesses to death. So
well,
now,
why couldn't I remember that? I read it, 3 days ago?
Well,
thank you.
Memory is a very subtle thing.
Yeah.
Now tell me. So how do you see the link? Let me try and understand that.
No, because all this death penalty and you know, because what you were saying about if it's a rape of a married woman, then the death penalty applies. If it's an unmarried woman, then it's
the death penalty applies. The problem with that is that in order for the death penalty to apply, there's supposed to be someone warning him that he's doing a crime for which the death penalty applies, and he says no, even so, and there have to be two witnesses. You know, so it's not so straightforward that the death penalty
applies. I wasn't trying to make a link, it's just that came into my head.
Ah, I see, yeah. Right.
Thank you for refreshing my memory on that.
Okay. Okay, but, So that's the first explanation, that we have the ox is a pure sacred kind of love, the donkey is a false kind of love, the donkey tries to cleave, the false kind of love tries to cleave to the pure love, as in the story of Dinah and Hamor, and in the end the circumcision of Hamor and his people removes that link, ultimately that link, because once it's in a more spiritual form, it's able to recognize that this is not for me, and a kind of a separation. So that's one version of the meaning of what it's saying, don't plow with an ox and a donkey together. Now we come to a second one. Uperish Hasheni. Now the second explanation. Sheshor v'chamor hem shtei klipot. Now we have a different. Both of them, both the ox and the donkey, are both representing something impure. V'hainu shegam shohu b'klipot. The ox is also part of the klipot. Now, why is there an ox among the Klipot, among the forces of impurity? In holiness, there is an aspect of an ox. Ezekiel had a vision. This is the first chapter of Ezekiel, a very mystical part of the Bible, where he had a vision of a kind of an image of the divine, and the divine is somehow, the presence of the divine is somehow on a chariot. The chariot is made of four posts with a platform on top. The four posts are actually, each post is like an angel, but with four faces. And there's the face of a man, the face of a lion, the face of an eagle, and the face of an ox. So these are the four posts of the chariot. Then there's some kind of platform, and above that is the presence of the divine, the hidden presence of the divine. So it's a very mystical passage. We read it as the Haftarah on Shavuot, which celebrates the giving of the Torah. And so it's that giving of the Torah was a mystical vision, and that's a mystical vision. You know, so it puts it together. So there we have the ox. So there's the idea of the ox in this mystical vision. So in the same way, if you have in the realm of the sacred, you have an ox, so also in the opposite realm of the impure, the non-sacred, there's also an ox. So the ox, what does the ox represent? Severity of the realm of unholiness. And the chamor, the donkey, as we saw before, is love of the realm of unholiness. So here we have a different picture. We have the ox is severity, which we put on the left, and the donkey is on the right, is love. But both of these are in the realm of unholiness. Now, so there you have the opposite of a pure kind of awe, of love and awe, which comes from the realm of love and severity of holiness. So in other words, this is the unholy, and it is all the mirror image of a holy dimension where you have a positive kind of love and a positive severity or fear or like different terminology. Now, these two things, of not putting them together, if you have these two aspects of the unholy together, through this unity, moving on to page 10, through this unity, if you put, you see, when you have this love and severity, it's as if the love is male, actually, and the severity is female. So it's interesting that in the Jewish imagination, the severity has a female dimension. But if you put the love and this love and severity together in this unholy realm, something negative comes from the ox and the donkey comes with excuses to Latin, a dog. That's the way it's like a Kabbalistic image. There comes a dog. This comes from the Zohar, right? So when you get this love, unholy love with unholy fear, you get a dog. Now, what does the dog represent? The dog represents Amalek. Amalek is this fearsome nation that attacked the Jewish people. Everyone else was in awe. The Jewish people had come out of Egypt. There was something very special about them. And then Amalek came and attacked them. So there is this. Now, Amalek is mentioned at the end of this week's Sedra, that we should remember Amalek. So the dog represents this Amalek that comes out from the ox and the donkey together. And now there we then have on line 3, it goes through a kind of taking different letters. The word chamor, chet mem vav resh, if you take the middle letters, they're mem and vav. Then you have the word ox, and the middle letter of that is also a vav. So mem is 40, vav is 6, and another vav is 6, makes 52. 52 is the numerical value of keleb, of dog. So in other words, if you add together, you take in Hebrew, the Hebrew word for donkey, the Hebrew word for ox, the two middle letters of donkey and the one middle letter of ox, you add it all together, it comes to 52, which is the numerical value of the word for dog. Now, if you put together the initial letters, donkey begins with the word, with the letter chet. Ox begins with the letter shin. Dog begins with the letter chof. If you put together chet, shin, chof, it makes choshech, which means dark. So we're here on the edge of the darkness, as it were. And it explains that now here we have another image. Abraham had two sons. Abraham had Ishmael and he had Isaac. Ishmael was born to Abraham before he had circumcision. So therefore there's something impure in Ishmael. Whereas Isaac is born after he had circumcision, and therefore Isaac is pure. So Ishmael represents the negative power of love as well. And so therefore Ishmael relates to this this line of this negative love. And so therefore comes that same concept of wanting to circumcise the people of Shechem, the people of this city, because you cannot have the ox and the donkey together, because there has to be because it would lead to something negative. In other words, if you have the ox, so it's rereading it in that midrash. You can't have the ox and the donkey together because something negative will happen. You'll have this dog. Now, it doesn't say it in the discourse, but the dog, kelev, one of the ways of explaining that is kuloy lev. The dog represents passion. You know, the dog loves its master very much and gets very angry. So the dog is a kind of a form of passion, unpurified passion. And so in this case, the severity, the false kind of severity in love produced together the dog, which is also something negative. So we have here an explanation of a midrash, which is telling the story of what happened in terms of the sons of Jacob and the father of the man who raped Dinah. It's telling that story and giving two different analyses, whether we say the ox is holiness and the donkey is impurity, or both the ox and the donkey are both impure. But it's sort of analyzing the story in terms of these images, you know. So now we're going to do another click, and we're going to look at it in another way. We now look at it in terms of the individual. Ubeyoy inyan ba'avodat ha'adam, understanding this in terms of the service of the individual. The sages tell us in the Talmud the connection between the ox and a field. The whole idea that the ox plows the fields, many harvests in the power of the ox. The ox represents the animal soul. And the animal soul of the individual. And the animal soul, so this is like another image. So there's the animal soul. And the animal soul, the source of the animal soul. Now this idea, the animal soul, is that each of us within us, we've got an animal soul and a divine soul. But there is this vision of Ezekiel with the face of the ox. So there's these four faces, and the face of the ox in that vision is the source of the animal soul. So the animal soul within us relates back to the image of the ox in that vision. So now this is called, it relates to, why does it start talking about a field? Because the image of the animal soul as a field is that something is sown in the field and it grows. Now what is sown into the animal soul? It's the divine soul. The divine soul is within. In fact, I put them here side by side. But if we look at the person, it's as if within the person is a divine soul, in their hearts or in their mind actually. And there is, but more powerful is the force of the animal soul. So the divine soul is inside the animal soul. So the divine soul is, as it were, sown, like you sow a plant, seeds in a field. And that's something which can be the force of the divine soul in the animal soul is that it grows with tremendous strength. So the very fact that we have an animal soul which has got a propensity for selfish, pleasure-seeking, hedonistic activity, but the divine soul inside the animal soul is really an opportunity for that to be completely transformed. And the relationship between the divine soul and the animal soul inside us is in order to transform that animal soul into something else. And so that's what is happening with the that's the interaction of these two souls inside us. And so we have to try and achieve a humility in the quality of the animal soul. So that's the ox, and the divine soul is in the ox, right? So the ox is the animal soul. So this is the ox. However, the donkey is a quality of coldness, of lack of enthusiasm. You see, the idea is that the divine soul, which is sown inside the animal soul, although the animal soul wants to do animal things, it's also its labor dig. It's got a life force about it. You know, sometimes dealing with children in school, you know, the best child is not necessarily the quiet, obedient child. You know, it could be that the very energetic, very troublesome, you know, the one who's always getting up to some kind of ridiculous prank or something like that, you know, and getting into trouble about this and getting into trouble about that. There's a lot of energy there, and all you have to do is get the right formula and you'll switch that energy into something positive. So that's the ox. The donkey represents coldness. So the ox is enthusiasm, you know, the ox goes at things and does things and runs around, you know, it's a very energetic animal. Whereas the, like an ox in a china shop, whereas the donkey represents something cold. In fact, there's a saying in the Talmud, a donkey is always cold. They used to use donkeys a lot. And it was always an issue of having a blanket for the donkey doesn't feel warm, you got to look after the donkey. So the donkey represents a coldness. So even if you're talking about the animal soul, there's a big difference between the ox and the donkey. And so keep the donkey away from the ox. The ox is a sort of a more pure form of animal soul, which can be energized and spiritualized by the divine soul. But the donkey will get in the way. And so therefore, there's two types of animal soul, the ox which is positive and the donkey which is negative. So in other words, instead of it being a story about the children of Jacob, the man who raped Dinah and so on, it's something about what is going on inside ourselves. And it's very interesting here that instead of distinguishing, you know, normally there's the divine soul and the animal soul and that's it. Whereas here it's the whole idea of the force of this coldness as well, which coming from the donkey, and we just have to be able to keep the donkey away. Now, reading that, now, if we take it this way, the ox is holy and the donkey is unholy. Now, that's in the first interpretation of the other story, where the ox represented Abraham and the donkey represents the father of the man who raped Dinah. But then we got the second explanation of the story, where both the ox and the donkey are aspects of negativity. So let's see how that works inside ourselves. According to the second explanation, that the commandment don't plow with the ox and the donkey together, is that that means they're two negative things which come together, two negative forces coming together. That is the kindness and severity, both of the inappropriate negative kind. So how does that work within ourselves? What's the negative quality of the ox inside ourselves? Now, in the Talmud, there is a whole thing about oxen and the damage that oxen cause. And there's two kinds of ox. There's an ox which normally doesn't gore people. But then you have an ox which gored someone once and gored someone again, you know, and finally you realize this ox has to be looked after. You mustn't let it out without a halter and someone holding a rope. And if it's in a stall, make sure it's locked up. Otherwise, it's going to cause damage. So there is a simple ox, and there is the ox which is going to cause damage. Now, the point is that within us, we can also have this thing, that there is this violent, aggressive, or negative dimension that becomes like the dangerous ox. And if we have a dangerous ox inside us, we have to try and deal with it, we have to try and refine it. And that also relates to Amalek, which is the dog that comes from the two klipot, the negative force of the ox, the negative force of the donkey, because in Amalek itself, there are also two aspects. Because on the one hand, Amalek represents cooling someone down. Someone's very enthusiastic about something positive. And another person comes along and says, oh, it's not worth doing, don't bother. That's called Amalek. You know, he's like cooling them down. But there is another aspect, that there is a warmth. The ability of Amalek to cause this comes from a stubbornness. And that kind of stubbornness, that it's not going to take any notice of this event. You know, like, it happens, you know, sometimes, you know, some of the things that happen with Israel, you know, like, remarkable things, and everyone is, like, very impressed. You know. It was the Gulf War, you know, 41 Scud missiles were shot at Israel. Unfortunately, one person was killed, but no one else. Could have been, God forbid, could have been very high figure, but it wasn't, you know. And so many people felt this is really divine protection, the land of Israel. So it's very easy. So the Amalek approach is, no, it's all chance, and ridiculing it, you know. So that's the, so we've got a hot klipa, a hot force of negativity, and a cold force of negativity. And then from them comes the kelev, the Amalek quality, which is also hot and cold. You know, it's hot in its stubbornness and it's cold in the way it dampens everything. So that is the, so that's taking this verse in the Torah, the story which happened with the land of Shechem, the people of Shechem and Dinah who got raped, and what happened next. Putting that into, like, elucidating this imagery of these two kinds of animal, the ox and the donkey, reading it into ourselves, and doing it in two different ways. One is where one is holy, the other one is unholy, the other is where both are unholy. Reading it then into our own selves, and that all of this is inside ourselves, And then we have the concept of Abraham and being circumcised. You see, being circumcised, it's part of the whole story over there. And the idea of Abraham being circumcised. And when Abraham, before he was circumcised, his name was Avram, and then he was given an extra hey in his name to make his name. Now you see, here's another numerical bank. So we have Avraham. Now he was given this extra hey when he got circumcision. So his name now, 1, 2, 200, hey is 5, and mem is 40. So that's 203, 208, 248. Now 248, we've got this chap, Hamor, yeah, the donkey person, 8, 40, and 200. He also adds up to 248. So the circumcision of Abraham is somehow able to deal with and transform the negative donkey, the chamor, which is inside ourselves. And in other words, that step of holiness is able to be transformed through an inner kind of circumcision. Now, what is the inner kind of circumcision? That is the service of the month of Elul. The service of the month of Elul is that first of all we have the attempt that a person seeks to circumcise themselves, to circumcise their own heart. It says, "Umaltem at olat lubavchem." You should circumcise the foreskin of your heart. The foreskin of the heart is the like a skin around the heart which doesn't enable it to feel, to be sensitive to godliness. But if we circumcise that, then, which we do through different kinds of spiritual effort in order to become more sensitive to holiness. But then there is a response from God. If we try to do that process, God finishes it off. God takes it to a higher level. So there's another verse which says, God will circumcise your heart. So there's us trying to circumcise our heart, and then God circumcising our heart. And all that relates to the circumcision of Abraham, which means being able to transform this negative dimension into something positive. And the relationship that we make the step and then God responds, all that result that relates to the month that we're in. We're in the month of Elul. And Elul is the initial letters of Aleph is Ani, I. Lamed is Ludodi, I am to my beloved. And then Vav is Vododi, and my beloved is Li to me. I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. That makes the initial letters Elul. So I am to my beloved means I make the step to circumcise this inner foreskin of my heart. And then God responds by taking that further. And in other words, we become more sensitive within us to spiritual things. The extreme negativity of the donkey inside us is itself able to be transformed. And certainly the ox is also able to be refined. Instead of being a dangerous ox, it becomes a very useful ox that plows and does lots of good things. And so we're able to transform ourselves. So in other words, the verse in the Torah, in our Sedra, about not having an ox and a donkey together, is here through the story of the ox, of the man called Chamor, which is a donkey, and Abraham being called an ox, and that whole relationship with Dinah in the middle. Incidentally, the sages tell us that the reason why this happened to Dinah was because Jacob didn't want Dinah to marry his brother Esau. And when he met Esau, he hid Dinah in a box, like in the luggage, because he didn't want his brother to catch sight of her, because he knew that he would fancy her, and then he would marry her. And the sages criticized Jacob for that, because they say if Dinah would have married Esau. She would have transformed Esau. So all this is a story of transformation. So here is the whole idea of us transforming ourselves and then God transforming us further. And then we're able to transform these negative dimensions inside us, the ox and even the donkey. And in that way, we're able to be blessed by God for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, in which we get a wonderful blessing for the new year in all aspects of life, children, health, and sustenance. That's the way this goes. Okay, so that was a little excursion.